I had kind of a nice surprise at the rectory yesterday morning. Some Jehovah's Witnesses came by. I really like it when that happens. Now, I have to give credit to them because I think it's pretty obvious that that's probably the rectory, and I think they probably knew that, so they didn't seem surprised when a priest answered the door. So good for them. They wanted to come by and share a little of the scripture with me, they said, and I like this when it happens, and good for them for going out, and they believe in the scripture, so they want to go share it. Would that all of us would do that. I know that there are some in the three parishes that are trying to get the Legion of Mary started up again, and one of the things that they said they want to do is to go door to door to evangelize. That's great. But I was kind of interested then to see, you know, these two Jehovah's Witnesses that came to my door, how do they do it? Like, what's their kind of mode of operation when they go to evangelize someone? What's their message? And it's interesting because their message was essentially by asking me, you know, is there any trouble you're having right now? Anything that's on your heart? You know, we have a scripture we want to share with you where it says, God's going to make it all okay. Essentially, kind of boiling the gospel down to, do you have problems? Well, God will fix it. And, you know, that is kind of a happy message to come around with, you know, because everybody's got problems. So why not? God will fix it. It's a kind of an easy sort of sell. But it's actually not the whole truth of the gospel. In fact, it's probably not even the most important part. Yes, it's true, like we hear in our psalm, in every age, O Lord, you have been our refuge. God really is our help, and he does fix problems. But that's a little bit too surface for Christianity. If we look at what Jesus does in the gospel today, as he's going around, kind of going door to door, proclaiming the gospel, what's his message? Well, kind of in contrast to like a preacher we might see going around today trying to get people in and win them over, Jesus starts his little door-to-door sales pitch, as it were, by saying, unless you hate your father, your mother, and your whole family, you can't be my disciple. Like, okay, well, that's not a good start, Jesus. I mean, you're going to turn people away. That doesn't sound very happy. And he says, no, unless you're willing to take up your cross and be crucified and die for me, you can't be my disciple. Well, now we've set the bar pretty high. In fact, I think rightly all of us would ask, who on earth can demand such a thing? Sell all your possessions, be willing to die, hate your family to be your disciple? Who do you think you are? Well, of course, no one ever in history ever made such demands as this, because there's only one time in history when God became one of us. And God really can make these demands. But I think it's interesting to note the message that Jesus brings is not, hi, I'm God, I'm here, and now everything will be okay. Everybody relax, all your problems are taken care of, don't worry, I'll just wave my hand and fix it. Well, that would have been a good way to attract followers. But Jesus does the opposite. He actually tells people, okay, so you want to be my disciple. That's nice. Here's all the ways you cannot be my disciple. These are all the ways I'm telling you, leave. In other words, if you want to be my disciple, you better decide if you're really in or not. Because you have to really want it if you're going to be my disciple. It's easy to be a part of these crowds that follow Jesus. They see him raising people from the dead and curing the sick and driving out demons. And they say, ooh, that's nice. I want to go see that. Like some kind of a little traveling circus or something. Jesus says, no, you want to be my disciple. It takes a lot more than just hanging around with me. How bad do you want it? How bad do you want it? I think there are really two key things that Jesus brings out then. Because there is Christian happiness, but if you want it, there are two things that you have to do. One, you've got to really have the desire for it. You've got to really want it. And you've got to be willing to do the hard things. Notice Jesus uses this little example of building a tower. He says, if you're going to be my disciple, this is like a big construction project. This isn't just, oh, I think this would be neat, I'll try this for a while. No, you better decide. If you're going to join the Christian life, do you have what it takes to complete this project? Because it's not easy. I would think about this all the time in Washington, D.C. If you look carefully at the Washington Monument, the big, tall obelisk that everybody sees, look at a picture of it, and if you look about from the bottom, about, say, like 15% of the way up or so, you'll notice a definite line. In fact, you'll see there when you look carefully that the stone completely changes at that point. What happened was they literally started to build the Washington Monument, but didn't budget enough for it and ran out of money. And for years, the Washington Monument that we love today sat as just a stump in the middle of Washington. Embarrassment, because look, somebody started to build and couldn't finish it. Eventually they said, we look stupid, we should finish it. And so they found the money and they finished it. But to this day, I always think about this gospel when I see the Washington Monument there and see, huh, you can see where they didn't have enough to finish. Jesus doesn't want that to happen to us. He says, you better decide if you've got enough to go all the way in the Christian life. We've got to, therefore, stir up our desire. We have to really want it. This is my constant prayer. Oftentimes I go to God in prayer, and my prayer is, Lord, increase my desire. Because I know I desire so many worldly and created things more than I want you. At any given time during the day, I am much more inclined to say, God, I would rather sit here and watch a football game than go over to the church and pray. I don't want to work on a homily right now, God. I'd rather go out to dinner and relax. And I know that that person needs to be visited, but I don't want to go anoint that sick person. I especially don't want to get up in the middle of the night when the phone rings and get out. There's all kinds of times where I know, God, I do not want you enough. I want all kinds of things but you. And then I just want you to like make me happy anyway. It doesn't work that way. So I'm praying, God, increase my desire. Help me to want you more. But then the second half is we got to do the hard things. We really do have to get up for that kid in the middle of the night that needs our help. We have to go visit that person that's our neighbor that maybe is lonely and we don't want to go do it. The last thing we want to go do is visit that person who's living a life that is in poverty. We don't want to see that person on the street. There's all kinds of hard things that we pass up all the time. And that might be the very invitation from God that we might see him in that. When I think of someone who did these two things better than anybody, great desire for God and willingness to do the hard things, I can think of no better example than Mother Teresa, who just a few hours ago, earlier this morning in Rome, Pope Francis named Saint Teresa of Calcutta. Now this is someone that even secular people throughout the time that she was alive said, this is a saint. This woman is a living saint. When she died, the news media is like, surely she'll be canonized a saint. Well, now she died in 97, and it just finally happened. She's now Saint Teresa of Calcutta. But I can't help but think that the secular media really gets Mother Teresa wrong. Because they look at her and they say, isn't this great? She wanted to help people. She really wanted to help people. She was willing to take care of the poor and the lowest of the low and the most abandoned. And well, that's all true. It is not what motivated Mother Teresa. If you read her writings, what motivated her to go take care of the poor was because, first of all, she loved Jesus. She really, really had that desire to love Jesus, gave herself completely to him to be consecrated to him in religious life. And then out of that came what she called her call within the call, where she's like, Teresa had said to the Lord, Lord, I want you. And the Lord said to Teresa, well, I want you to go to my poor. I want you to go to the slums of Calcutta and take care of these people. Mother Teresa did not love to do this. No one in their right mind would love to say, yes, please, I want to go to the gutter full of sewage and find people dying. No one loves that. No one finds great joy in taking care of people whose flesh is rotting and they smell and they are the most downtrodden poor. She didn't just love the poor. In her own words, she says, I see the face of Jesus in them. It was the face of Jesus, her beloved, that she saw in these poor people, and that's why she went there. Because Jesus was there. That's why she did it. This reminds me of my favorite Mother Teresa's story. It was told to me by a speaker we had at our parish one time who had a friend who was in the Marine Corps, and he was going to take some leave from his active duty to go see Mother Teresa. He was really impressed with Mother Teresa. It was a lot like these crowds that follow Jesus. He had seen Mother Teresa on the news taking care of poor people, and he thought, I want to do that. I'm going to go work with Mother Teresa. Well, so he takes leave, but he doesn't even say that he's coming. He just decides and flies to Calcutta. He literally shows up at Mother Teresa's monastery, knocks on the door, and says, hi, I'm here and I'd like to work with Mother Teresa. And unfortunately for him, the sisters there had to tell him, well, Mother Teresa's not here right now, actually. She's gone for a couple weeks. And he was very upset, obviously, because he'd come all that way just to see Mother Teresa and work with her. But the sister said, well, I mean, we do have some need. And so he decided he would stay. And they put him to work doing some kind of little handyman jobs. And he was fixing plumbing and electricity and things like that. And after he'd been there a couple weeks and it was about time for him to go home, there's a knock on his door. And he turns around and Mother Teresa is standing in his door. Little 4 foot tall Mother Teresa. And he's so happy. And Mother Teresa asks him, will you work with me? He's like, yes, that's why I'm here. I'll do anything. What do you want me to do? And she says, come with me. She takes him down to the local train station where there under a bridge in a gutter filled with sewage is a man who is lying and is dying. And she says to the Marine, now pick him up, carry him back. And the Marine said that he literally waited for her to like turn her back and then rolls down his sleeves so that his arms won't touch this person. And he lifts him up out of the sewage and carries him back to the hospital at the convent. And then Mother Teresa leads him into the washroom and says, now wash him. That was the last thing he said he wanted to do. There was this terrible smell and this person was just covered with sewage and was dying. There are flies everywhere. But he said, well, Mother Teresa is asking. So, I mean, she does this every day. I'll try to do it. So he literally puts this person in this tub and he fills the water and he says it just turned black. I mean, it was so bad that he filled the tub and then so he just had to immediately drain the water. And he filled it up again and the same thing. And he had to do this over and over, just filling and draining the tub just so he could get to the point where he could start to wash this person. And as he's washed them, he's just repulsed by the whole thing. But then he said that a thought came to his mind. He said, this person is probably going to die right here in my arms. It is not right that the last person on earth that he sees should be someone that hates him and is just repulsed by his condition. That's not right. So he said that he willed himself to choose to love this person. In fact, he says he began to repeat over and over, I love you and I'm not going to leave you. And he continued to wash the man and he said, with tears are just coming to his eyes because he's so moved now, he kind of pulled him up against the side of the tub and to pour water on his back. And as he's holding the man there in his arms, he says he saw his face. And as he looked at his face, he said, I'll never forget it, because at that moment, the man's face completely changed, and it was no longer him. I saw with my own two eyes the actual face of Jesus. Not some figment of my imagination, not something I felt, or his face was actually changed. It was the face of Jesus. I was staring right at it, and I was just shocked. And he finished and lovingly laid the man down and stood up just completely dumbfounded. And when he turned around, he saw that Mother Teresa was standing in the doorway. And she saw the look on his face. And he says, she smiled at me. And she said, you saw him, didn't you? He's like, yeah, I did. She's like, yeah, I have too, many times. In fact, if you ask the sisters, the missionaries of charity, this is a gift that from time to time they'll experience, that in a poor person that they're caring for, they will experience this miracle where they really will see the actual face of Jesus. This Marine started at kind of a surface level, like the crowds that followed Jesus, just interested in Mother Teresa. But he was willing to go, stirred up his desire, and then faced with something he hated that completely repulsed him, he said, I will do the difficult thing. And he did it. And as a result of that, he saw the face of Jesus. What about you? Do you want to see the face of Jesus? That's what we're all made for. God put it in our hearts. That's what heaven is, to be face to face with Jesus forever. But if we want that, it's not this superficial kind of prosperity gospel where, here, just turn your life over to God, it'll be happy, you'll see Jesus. It's those two things. We have to really, really want it. We have to stir up our desire and say, yes, God, I want you more than anything. And then when we want that, We've got to be willing to go anywhere, even to the slums of Calcutta. So how much do you want it? Do you want God? If you do, then ask yourself now, what is it that God is asking you right now to do that you absolutely just do not want to do? I encourage you to be like Mother Teresa. Give everything to God. Desire Him more than anything. Do the hard thing. And then you too will see the face of Jesus.